Hello, everyone. We have a very short intro today. This is the Season 4 Q&A episode. Huge thanks to everyone who submitted questions. We had a lot of fun thinking back over the show as a whole. And because our Patreon is currently paused, this episode also includes the full Season 4 blooper reel after the Q&A. I hope you enjoy all of the bits and goofs that didn't make it into the episodes. Our featured charity is the Lilith Fund, which provides funding for Texans who need abortions and can't afford them. In light of the horrific anti-abortion law that's recently gone into effect in the state, we encourage you to donate, as well as to contact your representatives to express support for the Women's Health Protection Act, which would provide national-level protection for abortion rights. Over the next few months, we will be posting blooper reels from earlier seasons and bonus episodes that were previously only on our Patreon. And as always, keep an eye on our Twitter at @clever_corvids for updates on our new show. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Season 4 / post-series Q&A. We got a ton of great questions from Twitter and one via email. We actually got a lot via email from one person, but I'm sorry, Kevin, I had to whittle it down. Otherwise, like a third of the episode would just be going through yours. For once, I don't actually have, usually when I do these Q&As, I have a question prepped to ask everybody else, but I don't have one this time. I couldn't think of anything. Do you all have something you want to ask me? I feel like...
Not particularly.
I've put you all on the spot in past Q&As. I feel like it's only fair.
For prospective viewers, you're getting this a while after we're recording it, but we've already cried our eyes out and thrown feelings at each other and stuff. So I'm pretty good on asking things.
I have a question for you, Ree.
Yes.
What do you think Rigney's favorite item on the menu on Panera is?
Does Rigney go to Panera?
He does now.
He's a man. He's a small business owner. He's a man on a budget. I think that he enjoys a broccoli cheese soup and a bread bowl.
Excellent.
He's extremely valid.
Are any of
valid.
Those things readily available in Duskwall? No. No, they're not.
But Panera
but
is.
I think that's what he would like if he could go to a real Panera.
I appreciate the pain in your voice.
Thank you.
Now I'm picturing just Panera in our Duskfall is just exists somehow outside of the physics and space and time where the food that doesn't exist in Duskfall, like, it doesn't exist anywhere except this Panera.
Yeah, it's just a dimensional rift.
It's one thing that happened when the world broke is that Panera just it remained the same.
John Harper, I'm so sorry.
Panera transcends space-time.
Of all the restaurants.
I don't know.
Yeah, we're not even big Panera fans.
No, we're not.
Kim just stuck it in
there.
I'm
a Panera fan.
Okay. Thank you, Beth.
You get free French bread with your soup.
I mean, I do enjoy that.
All right. So I feel like for the most part, if you've made it this far, you probably know who we all are. But for tradition's sake, let's do a quick round of introductions. Almost 4 minutes into the episode.
Uh-huh. We're professionals. It's fine.
Yeah. So I am Ree, pronouns are she and her. I was the GM of the Magpies and will be the GM of Project Blue Jay. And I am managing all of the boring administrative financial stuff for Clever Corvids, because I like spreadsheets.
Hi, I'm Josie. I use she pronouns or it pronouns. I was playing Minx, and I'm going to be playing again in Project Blue Jay, and also maybe some other stuff. Shh.
My name is Kim. I use she, her. I played Blair Colhane on the Magpies, and on Project Blue Jay, who knows?
We know.
We know. Y'all
but
don't.
But we're not revealing those secrets yet.
No.
I am Minna. I use she, her pronouns. I play Myra on the Magpies, and
on Project Blue Jay.
Insert redacted noise here. All right. So as I said, we got a whole bunch of questions. A lot of them just kind of about sort of the scope of the show as a whole, which is going to be fun as we all kind of scramble to remember 4 years worth of stuff.
Uh-huh. Jesus.
I'm going to start off with a question from Sophie Legasse, and I apologize deeply if I just mispronounced your name. How do you feel your respective play and GMing styles have evolved over the course of the show?
Mm.
I mean, when I first started, I know I was still... I was about a year off of playing almost exclusively D&D and Pathfinder at that point. So I was still kind of getting into more different kinds of games. I always wanted something more narrative, but I was still getting used to it. Like, I'd been playing Masks and Monster Hearts, but that was about it. So I think just in general, my attitude of what I want out of an RPG and how fluid I am about things has opened up a lot. I can definitely, like, roll with the punches a lot more than I used to.
I think for me, I just in general got better at playing tabletop games, and I know that's like a really generic answer, but you have to understand, I'm still very much tabletop RPG newbie.
You're the babby.
Yeah. I came into this 4 years ago having only played Fantasy Flight's Edge of the Empire before, and like, you know, just like this much, just like a teensy, teensy bit of taste of like D&D, and that was it. So over the course of this show, I just got better at like improvising and... I don't know, thinking about my consequences, especially since Blades is just like a very consequence-heavy game. I'm still not great about thinking about things mechanically because that's not where my interests lie. But I certainly feel as though I have just gotten a lot better with like thinking on my feet and thinking in my character's shoes and stuff like that.
I have to say I find it a lot harder to go back to games that aren't Blades now. Like, if I'm in any game where I have to choose my equipment ahead of time, I'm like, I would rather die. Which is sad because I very much enjoy Edge of the Empire, but you do have a set equipment, set of equipment that you have. I think on it, a weird thing that this game has especially helped me with is like, we've been trying to remember to, like, help each other get the spotlight and, like, support each other's arcs. And it's really interesting, especially with Myra, because, like, she's ended up being a very supportive character. So it's been fun kind of playing that role more.
Yeah. I mean, and I can say kind of from the GM perspective that, like, I don't mean this is like you all were terrible coming in, like... You all were like really good role players at the start, but like you all just like, I, you know, just really improved as like role players and performers so much over the course of the show. And it was just very cool to see. In terms of GMing, I also kind of struggle a little bit with games that aren't Blades now. It's really hard for me to do intensive prep for systems that are more GM-driven than player-driven, because I'm just like, you want me to make maps? And I have to plan out all these encounters? Okay,
well,
I guess.
See, there's the... I say again, you could not and say you did. And then everything you do looks intentional, but you're really just making shit up.
I do a fair amount of that. I think that's kind of... I think that's kind of what has evolved the most for me over the years is that I have gotten a lot better at improvising as a GM. It was something I really struggled with when I started trying to run games. And it was like something I struggled with to the point that I just kind of like gave up trying to run games for a few years.
Aww.
To be fair, I was a baby DM for Dungeons and Dragons, which is a very, there's a heavy workload put on the DM in D&D. Like, you have to do a lot of stuff. And I also, like, I didn't have those skills of improv. So if my players went off the path that I had planned, I was just like, I don't know what to do now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, now I'm just kind of like, I don't really make solid plans. I'm just kind of like, yeah, like, you'll probably end up over here. Maybe. I'll wing it. But yeah, it's definitely been kind of interesting thinking back of like where I was 4 years ago in terms of GMing. I feel much more confident in it now, for sure.
And now you're running games off maybe a paragraph of notes?
Yeah, I could, if I were so inclined, like, I wouldn't do this for a podcast recording because I need more, like, for a podcast, we have a narrative we're trying to tell, so I do a little more planning there. But like for a Blades game with players that I knew, I could run a game with zero prep at this point. I can say that with confidence.
Wow.
I could walk into a Blades game and be like, all right, what do you want to do? Maybe we'll do that for the podcast someday.
That would actually be just pretty
fun. Just for the chaos of it. So the next question we have is from The Crumpet, who asks...
Hi, Crumpet.
What's up, Crumpet?
Why did you decide to have the story go along the vigilante take down the bad guys route rather than continue climbing the underworld ladder?
We were really bad thieves.
Yeah, we were really bad at it, and just none of us were... It seemed like none of us were really playing assholes.
Yeah.
Like, we ended up making characters with very strong senses of justice. So it just eventually kind of stopped making sense that we were in it for our own personal gain. And I don't know about y'all, but we were fresh into the big orange Cheeto. So, like, you know,
yeah,
stuff like that was on the brain.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I didn't even make Myra as somebody who sought justice, but then she was with this crew, and I guess Myra got radicalized at some point along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know Finn had a huge mm-hmm. impact on the crew going that direction mm-hmm. in season one.
Yeah, because Minx wasn't quite radicalized either. I don't know, second episode I did kill a person who was mean to a girl, so never mind, I guess.
Yeah. Minx was doing a great vigilante thing. Finn was doing a separate vigilante thing. Myra credits Finn with her vigilante turn. But I think that the crucial thing is that when we turned to the vigilante playbook, we were just using the mechanics to define something that was already there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was first coming up with the character concept for Blair, I also did not come at it intentionally with like a social justice slant, but with her background with, like, you know, the work that she does with ghosts and, you know, how much compassion she has for the dead. She just, and Blair just in general having like a really big heart, I feel like that just lends itself to like activism. So like it was a natural path, but like in hindsight, but it was something that I was not aware of when I first started.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I was thinking with Blair when you were like, yeah, I didn't build her with a social justice bend. I'm like, what are you talking about? She was out here fighting. Because in some ways, like, ghosts are not a good one-to-one for any marginalized group, because a lot of ghosts are, in fact, very dangerous. So I don't want to draw that comparison.
Right.
But, like, yeah, like, she had so much compassion, for sure. And yeah, like so many of the characters had kind of lived through a lot of the you know, oppression and marginalization that, yeah, it didn't, I did not have really much of a plan to steer them that way. It just kind of happened. And yeah, like Minna said, when we switched to vigilantes, it wasn't a change in the narrative at all. It was just updating the mechanics to reflect what was happening in the story.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So our next question is, I combined these two. They're from two different people, but they kind of thematically fit together. So Kevin Brown asks, which was your favorite villain to fight? And then Day-Day asked for me, which antagonist did you most enjoy playing?
Well, people might take it for granted that my favorite villain to fight was Lord Mora. That was a really rocky battle. And
oh, no.
We kind of had to be stone cold through the whole thing. No, it for me, it was the Teslin stuff, because that was so overwrought and dramatic and was a big turning point. And
yeah,
we did a really good job at just like tearing my heart out and stomping it into pieces afterward. So like, I enjoyed that part.
You're welcome.
I think for me, so my answer is actually twofold. Narratively, I think my favorite fight has to go to the Satara showdown.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was just so fucking fun to do and we planned it for ages. Couldn't have been happier with how that ended up. But mechanically speaking, and this is kind of a technicality because it wasn't necessarily a fight, but something that was a confrontation was at the end of season three with that interdimensional being, how Rain like resolved how trippy that was. I really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really liked that as well. In terms of like specific villains, honestly, Lady Drake was really fun.
Yeah.
Oh, it was my favorite to play. I think for me, it's a toss-up between Lady Drake and Satara.
Mm.
Lady Drake, just because she was just so smarmy and smug and arrogant. And that's just kind of, for me, playing villains is like I'm setting up targets. It's like, you know, I'm the person at the bowling alley setting up the pins. And so I want to make it really fun for the players to knock them down. So just having somebody who was so confident that she was untouchable and so confident that she could manipulate the crew was fun, because I knew she was going to get her comeuppance. And it was, yeah, it was very, very fun to play her and very fun to watch her get taken down. And then Satara was, I don't know if I want to say fun, but just kind of, I think having that kind of unfold in throughout Blair's arc and having that, you know, that relationship deteriorate, I really, the speech that she gave in the season three finale, I'd had that written for like years.
Oh, yay.
And yeah, it's just, yeah, having villains that have kind of a long relationship with one of the main characters is always a really interesting and cool dynamic to play with.
Totally.
So the next question is again from Kevin Brown. And the question is, the statue Kevin comes to life and writes a tell-all book, Stories from the Magpie's Nest. Funny story does he tell about each of the characters as a group or individuals?
Holy cow.
What things has Kevin seen?
What hasn't he seen?
Well, one does not develop such a perfect sense of fashion like me without a bit of practice. So I think Kevin writes about all the ridiculous outfits Minx has gone through, like the ones that just weren't suitable.
Okay, but how many times has Minx done like a little mini fashion show in the living room of the nest?
Oh, all the time. If they'll let her, she'll do it.
This is me and my friends every time we get new clothes. I feel like Hex has stolen at least one thing that we really wanted back that he really didn't want to give back.
Yep.
Yeah.
This is drawn from life of the scariest the cat has ever been, is when he stole a steak and did not want to give it back.
Oh my god, the noises.
The size he is now, he made terrible, terrible noises at us.
What if he stole Eyeball Friend one time?
God. Oh, no. Batting it around the house.
Yes. Like a little hamster ball.
That's not a toy. It's just rolling around. I love that, mostly because I just...
You can hear it, like the glass rolling around along the floorboards.
Mm-hmm. Ends up under a couch. this ancient, powerful relic used as a cat toy. I love that. That makes me really happy. Get dunked on Kotar.
I think Kevin has seen lots of glowing lights and maybe some faint screeching noises peeking out through the cracks in the door frame of Blair's room, but that is all he knows. Because he knows and respects the nobody in Blair's room rule.
Yeah. So our next question is from Professor Screamwick. How mad is Satara going to be when she eventually breaks free and discovers the 300 to 400 years worth of graffiti mustaches that have been drawn on her face?
Not my problem.
That was not going to be included in my fanfiction, but now it will be. Thank you.
Honestly, I think she's going to have other things to be mad about in 300 to 400 years. I do feel, though, that there's a non-zero possibility that Skurlock has her moved into, like, not his Duskwall estate, but his secret hideout out in the Deathlands, and just, like, uses her as a coat rack.
They're gonna
That's actually really
kill
excellent.
Each other.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But Skurlock figures he's got a few centuries to plan on how to deal with her before she breaks out, so he can use her as a coat rack in the meantime.
That's so good.
Alice Kira asks,
"Hi, Alice.
Yes, a friend of the show, longtime listener, has sent in 3 questions. The first question is, what's an area of Duskfall you would have liked to spend more time exploring?
Ooh.
The Lost District.
Mm. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
We could have done some cool world building with that.
Mm-hmm. We did have a very good episode there.
Yes, you did burn some stuff down.
We also met a harvester.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think I had to export my one and only time in Magpies.
You...
Oh, geez.
You set it on fire, and that didn't help.
Clearly, I wasn't using enough fire.
Okay, Myra.
I don't know. I kind of wanted to, weirdly, our side of the city. We spent a lot of time in Night Market, which is kind of over there, and then, like, Char Hollow and the docks. But we didn't spend a whole lot of time in Six Towers or other parts of the city. So, like,
yeah,
we specifically chose Six Towers for the Nest because people wouldn't expect us to be all the way over there.
Yeah.
I think White Crown would have also been cool, but for story purposes, I understand why we never went there.
Yeah. I mean, you went there a couple times. The episodes where you broke into the Archive of Echoes.
Oh,
was
yeah.
up in White Crown, but I think that might have been the only time you went up there.
Yeah.
I'll say, for me, one that I would have loved to spend more time in was Tangletown.
Oh, yeah.
I think you went there once, but it's a little area in Crow's Foot that is this, like, shanty town built on the wreckage of a, like, half-sunken Leviathan hunter. And what makes it interesting is that it is explicitly neutral territory for all the gangs in the city. Gang violence is not tolerated there. And it's just, I don't know. It's a real interesting concept. And I think we only went there once. And I kind of wish we'd...
Yeah.
I wish that we'd had more reason to visit.
Yeah. That sounds really cool. I have no memory of that.
It was... You went there in the episode where you were investigating... who was trying to assassinate Bazo.
Oh.
You met up with somebody in Tangletown.
Mm-hmm.
Next question from Alice is, did you make some changes to the rules of Blades while you were making the show, or did you stick more or less rules as written? Oh, boy. I can say that from the GM side, yeah. I more or less completely abandoned the entanglement roles as part of downtime because I didn't need them. After, like, the first 2 episodes, the crew was generating enough problems on their own without me needing to help it along. I also, a lot of it was rules that I just kind of dropped that I didn't feel like they were working for us. I barely used the faction system in terms of the, like, you know, plus three means they do this for you. Like, I kept track of the crew's relationships with different factions and what the factions would do for them, but I didn't really use the number tracking. There's one other thing that I... Oh, the war mechanics. We used them for part of season two.
Yeah.
We did?
And I didn't like it. I don't think anybody liked it.
No.
Because, like, effectively, you all were at war with the Circle of Flame, like, the entire run of the show.
But right. The actual war mechanics were deeply unpleasant.
Yeah. And I think that if we had been running a different type of game, the war mechanics would have worked better. Like, I could see, like, I think the war mechanics are meant more for, you know, if you all had been fighting the Lamp Blacks.
Well, I think they're also more for if you have a temporary war instead of a 4-year vendetta.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you, like... There's also kind of an assumption, because vigilantes are not part of the core rules, so all of the core gangs, or crew types, rather, can have gangs. So, like, part of what's assumed that's happening if you're at a war is, like, you're sending your street toughs out to fight with their street toughs, and they're brawling in the street. But you all were just, like, the three of you at that point. And then there, I know it's on record that there's several points where people were like, can we do this by the rules? And I was like, I don't know, but it sounds cool, so let's do it. Which, my opinion is that the rules should be always in service of the story, and if the rules are getting in the way of it, change the rules.
Although we are hoping to flex some of the rules coming up.
Yes, yeah. Some of the ones we didn't use. Yeah, a few systems... That didn't get touched on in Magpies that we're hoping to dig into a little bit with Blue Jay. And then the last question that Alice has, which I think is probably the most important one that could be asked, how's Kay doing?
Probably good.
And yeah, Kay is doing great. Kay is continuing to live her best life. In an alternate reality where I get, like, comical amounts of money, after I use that money to, like, fix the world's ills, some of the leftover would go towards, like, a comic book series or a graphic novel of Kay's adventures as a hound.
Oh, yay.
With Shrimp as her hunting pet. And just having a, you know, a good, weird time in Duskwall, continuing to be tall and hot and tattooed.
Kay is one of those NPCs where I don't think it's possible to dislike her in any way.
Yeah. Kay's the best. And we were talking about this earlier. We've heard from some fans that Kay seems to be, like, our most swiped NPC, and that Kay keeps showing up in other people's Blades in the Dark games, which I love. That's wonderful. Please feel free to take her and Shrimp and drop her into your version of the Gondoliers as well. Yeah, she's just great. All right. So the next question is from, screen names, the bane of my existence. Archaean?
Yeah, I would say Archaean.
Archaean. Okay. Mm-hmm. Again, I apologize if I pronounced that wrong. Asks, across the entire show, what single moment did your characters most regret or wish had gone differently? And is that the same as a moment for you as a player?
Things that we regret?
I have an answer.
Something that your character regrets. And is that character regret different than a player regret?
I mean, Mink's most regrets the Teslan murder, or rather Nerix witnessing it, because that was pretty traumatic. Me as a player, I don't regret that at all.
We planned that shit.
Me as a player, I can't really think of a specific instance, but it's just all the times where I could have gone harder into a bit or description or something like that and then didn't. That's usually like a regret I have sometimes. It's like, oh, I missed this perfect opportunity to just say something or go further into this or something like that.
Yeah.
So for Myra, I think her regret is pushing Ogil off that cart.
Ooh.
And leaving her for dead, because that did not... It wasn't a good thing in the moment, and it really wasn't a good thing afterwards, and the way it ended was fairly awful also. Like, Ogil got peace, but, you know, after literally having her spirit enslaved to Salia.
Yeah.
And, like, also because she was probably the closest thing Myra could have considered to a friend for a while before Jaren.
Mm.
Like, they weren't friends. But Ogil was not as awful as the others.
Oh.
I don't know that I necessarily regret that as a player. I think it made for a really interesting story, and it really intensified how awful Salia is, which I think was great. And also, just having the Terminator come after you is really fun as a narrative thing. So I think we did good things with it. But boy, that was a decision that got made in split second that really had some consequences.
Yeah.
For me as a player, I think what I regret the most is, like, there's definitely sessions listening back that I can hear that I was in the middle of, like, combat or something, and my brain just, like, switched off, which happens for me a lot in combat, especially. You know, like, how many guys are up? Who needs help? And I'm like, I could have been more engaged there.
It happens.
Yeah.
I think for me, something that Blair regrets the most was during her recovering Ghost's long-term project when she destroyed that work-in-progress spirit that she was working on.
Mm.
That was really hard on her. For me as a player, one thing that I wish I had done differently is that I think I could have built up the reveal of the ability on her sheet, but the one where you can shoot lightning out of your hands.
Tempest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I had foreshadowed that a little bit better instead of just dropping it right in the middle of the episode out of nowhere, which kind of was my plan from the beginning, but I wish narratively, like maybe the episode before in a downtime scene, I could have set that up so that people had some hint that it was coming instead of like having it come out of nowhere and also having so little time left in the show to actually use that ability.
Yeah. I know that, like, every time I edit an episode, I'm always just like, oh, I should have picked a different consequence, or I should have done this or that. And, like, I am my own worst, you know, Monday morning quarterback. but, you know, by that point, it's recorded and done. And, you know, I think the thing is that, yeah, we're all our own worst critics in that sense. And, like, a lot of the stuff that we're like, oh, we could have done that better. Like, yeah, it probably could have been better in sometimes. But nobody's ever going to know what we put out is what's out. And folks seem to like it, turns out. All right. Next question is from Kyle Latino, who asks, what would have happened to Duskwall if the magpies didn't exist?
Oof. I think other people would have done things. I mean, we have the unions going. We have other people who are trying to build the best. I think they made a big change, but I think that other people would have emerged who also did these things. And, I mean, they're always finding allies in it as well.
Mm-hmm. Although, would the Circle still exist? And would they have been stopped from getting the relics of Kotar?
That's true.
What were they really going to do with them, Bree, if they got them? Because...
Well, so here's... I mean, like, they kind of knew what they did individually, but they knew that if you got them all together, it would give them a lot of power. I don't know. Have I told you what would have happened if you all hadn't interrupted that ritual?
No. I think so.
Okay, so it would have been very bad if you had let that ritual continue forward, or in this hypothetical question, if the Circle had gotten their hands on it. Because what would have happened is that it would have summoned Kotar back from whatever crack in the afterlife he had found his way into as a spirit, and he would have immediately possessed somebody nearby at, like,
full pre-cataclysmic sorcerer strength and then just gone on to wreak bloody havoc on the city.
Jeez.
So
somehow
that's why I telegraphed very loudly to all of you, like, you need to stop this.
Yeah.
But yeah, if the circle had gotten all of them, I mean, probably
same thing.
Yeah, same thing. But it well, because I'm thinking about it now, and it's like, well, you know, several of the circle members probably would have gotten killed in the initial ritual, but they also had a demon there. So, like, it would have been a mess. It would have been very bad. A lot of people would have died.
Mm-hmm. I think if the Madkais haven't done what they did, the clinic would still be running business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
The docks would still be running business as usual. Yeah. Those are the first two things that come to my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the things that kind of came to mind for me, too, with this question. Is like, I think Minna's right, is that there's lots of other people that are fighting for a better Duskwall, but there's specific personal connections that the Magpies have that, because of those specific connections, those changes wouldn't have happened without the Magpies. So, like, the clinic, you know, the dock ward free zone, the Red Lamp being turned into an employee-owned operation. You know, there's specific things in the city that made huge differences that I don't think would have happened without the Magpies. Proud of you all. You did good.
Yeah.
All right, so our next group of questions are from Day Day. The first one is, what is your favorite thing that another player, re-included, has done? This is really hard.
How do you choose?
Picking
you
one do, thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's say with what is a cool thing?
Okay. I'm going to say a cool thing was Minna coming up with Myra's whole arc. Because I had no idea about Salia until later, or the stuff with Myra's mom and stuff like that, and I just thought Myra's arc was really powerful and good. And I enjoyed it a lot. And Kim for immediately seeing one of the fundamental premises of the setting and being like, my character is against that. I'm a ghost rights activist. And I'm like, yes. My secret favorite thing is, not to keep bagging on Kim, but
oh no.
That, remember the Whitehall episode where Ree goes, and handlebar mustache, and you're like, no. That noise you made and that silence we had afterwards.
Kim just left.
I'm sorry, Kim.
We can cut no, this I out try if not you want. To.
It's just, I don't know, it was such a good moment.
Listen, I know Ree didn't even walk into that intentionally. I just have an unfortunate thing. And she said a descriptor. And my brain made a false equivalence.
To be fair, they made a younger, hotter version of Colonel Sanders. So that's not too off the wall now.
They did.
So, like.
Kim, have you seen that movie?
What movie?
Isn't there a Lifetime movie?
It's a video game.
Oh, it's a video game.
It's a dating sim.
What was the movie? There's like a life... Anyway, we'll come back to that some other time.
Oh, Christ. Okay.
That sound was adorable, and it was just sort of like, we're good friends.
We are.
Oh, God, there was a movie.
Yes!
There was a movie?
Thank you. I know what I
recipe
I wasn't
for
imagining
seduction.
It.
Oh, my God, there was.
It's a Lifetime film.
What is KFC
marketing
on? I'm
not clicking
on
any of these links. I just Googled it.
Okay,
we have to move on.
Uh-huh.
For the sake of our sanity and this episode.
Yes, anyway.
Still answering a question, aren't we?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. We're saying nice things about each other.
We sure are. It's like Thanksgiving dinner. I think one thing I loved about Minx was her relationship with Nerix. Every single scene was just so adorable. So sweet.
That's one of my favorites, too.
And, like, such a good core of Minx's character, especially, you know, something that fuels her retirement too and wanting a better life. It was just mwah, so good. Chef's kiss. One thing, and like also tangentially, I think Myra's relationship with Finn and how just ironclad that was. As short-lived as it was still just really foundational to not only to Myra, but to the Magpies as a group as a whole. So it was just super cool.
And that one kind of emerged later. Like, we didn't plan that before the show started. Madge and I talked after the show started and decided that was how it was.
Yeah.
Man, the time when I didn't realize I could talk to y'all out of character about character arcs. Gosh, I can't even, like, trying to figure out where to start. And I wanted to start with Rhi because I feel like we haven't. I do love how Rhi has taken, like, we all came up with, like, backstory characters, sort of, and, like, brought them in. And, like, I love how Rhi, like, beautifully embodied all of them so they really came to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, aww. I don't know what you guys told her about yours, but, like, I don't know how, but every single backstory character I gave Rhi, she played perfectly. Like, exactly how they were in my head. And, like, I don't even think I gave her that much. Like, Jaren, all of the apprentices, Salia, is great.
Here's the thing. I gave Rhi basically nothing to start with, which is atypical for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, usually I make a lot of long-winded, edgy backstories and stuff, but Minx started out very, very simple because she was originally made for a one-shot, and I had, like, okay, here's my positive contact and here's my negative contact, and we were childhood friends, and I want to get rich now. Go.
Oh my god. And then shit just so kind of developed good.
From there. Uh-huh.
Like, I just want to call out how beautifully layered, like, the everything between Nerix and Minx and Bazo is. Like, it's just, I love it mm-hmm. so much.
Rhi really brought that shit to life.
Yeah. So that's Rhi. For Josie, I adore how extra Minx is, but also that, like, you kind of slowly got to see her unfold the, like, softer core of her.
Aw, yeah. Thank you.
And I just love, Blair is so, she always has such a strong point of view. Like, she is, you know exactly what she's gonna want out of a situation. It's great. Secret favorite, though, that one time that Blair just tried to play it off that Minx and Myra were her moms, and we just rolled with it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I still looking think for about your
lost
that.
Dog.
Sometimes a family is.
That was just, I had to cut so much of my hysterical laughter for there, because Kim just going, let go of my moms! And we all just lost our shit. I think my favorite, a lot of you all have already touched on things that were some favorites, but I think, like, my favorite moments as a GM were when I wasn't doing anything, was when, you know, two of you or all three of you were just having these really awesome, emotional, deep in-character conversations about, you know, your relationships and the things that you were doing and the things that were happening. And I would just, like, sit back and listen. And the fact that you were so connected to, like, your own characters, but also just had such a solid understanding of their relationships to each other that you could play those out was so cool. Those are some of my favorite scenes to listen to. Was just when you all just dug real deep and had the characters just talk.
Mm-hmm. All the times we cried on mic.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Pretty much. So that's the nice thing for me, is that I can just mute myself and nobody can hear me. So the next question, which character's development, PC or NPC, surprised you the most? I think we kind of talked about this a little bit in the last one.
Honestly, I think it was kind of... No, it was Rigney.
Because Rigney surprised you?
Not just because of the surprise betrayal, but just because we knew very little about him starting out, aside from what kind of person he was. So just where he ended up was all very surprising to me.
Yeah.
Kind of Bazo also. I think for me, the answer Bazo's is like
too, yeah.
All the ones who like kind of came around, like Jiren a bit as well, like the people who like came around to kind of being on our side, like actually. And it was like, you never expected those people to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Bazo is still confused about how he ended up where he is.
Confused, frustrated.
He's just a permanent grump, and I love him.
I think in a sense, K also is a befitting answer, just by the sheer factor of we were not expecting her to, like, not only stick around, but become, like, such a favorite of both, like, us as performers and as a group, and also just of the show. Like, she became such a staple when, you know, like, in the very early episodes, we just made her up on the spot, and we all just...
Yeah.
We all went, hot buff lady, Awooga, and now she's here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, literally, I put this, and like literally she was just supposed to be there to give you like one piece of exposition information, like just some random gondolier, and I put a little flavor on her of tall, buff, tattooed lady, and you were all like, we love her with all of our hearts. And then the next time you went to go talk to the gondoliers, like, is the tall, buff lady there? And I was like, yes, she is, and I've given her a name. And now she's here forever, which I'm super glad about because I love Kay, and I'm very glad you all latched on to her. Yeah, I think for me, Bazo is probably my biggest surprise. I expected him to stay pretty firmly in the antagonist camp. So the fact that Minx and Myra really went to the effort of befriending him and sort of winning him back over after, like, because you all fucked with Bazo a lot in the early season.
We sure did.
Like, even as late as that time we hid, like, the fake hand.
Yeah, you all, like, you instigated a war between his gang and the Circle of Flame. You, like... stumbled across his, like, secret forgotten god rituals. And, yeah, it was like...
I have kind of retroactively justified Meeks' decisions there as she's always thought of Bazo as the more competent one and doesn't think he can actually suffer bad consequences.
I mean, he's got a whole-ass gang.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that, I think, a little bit in the episode where he was like, somebody's trying to fucking kill me, and I don't know who, and I need your help. Where Minx was just like, oh, shit. Uh-huh. You're not untouchable. Oh, no.
But also, yeah, I was really surprised everyone else latched on to Bazo and brought him around, because I was expecting the arc to be like, we mend a bit, but then just kind of agree to not be in each other's lives. But I guess that's not true.
Yeah, no. He helped you and Nyrix move in. He carried a mattress for you. That is a deep amount of devotion.
Uh-huh. He watched you flex for Nyrix quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I don't think you should be surprised that I latched onto Bazo because he is unfortunately Minna bait. I made Myra off a similar template because I'm very into that kind of character.
Oh, my cranky gay son.
Mm-hmm.
Someday in the future, he's going to show up at Minx and Nerix's place in just an abject panic. And once they calm him down enough to talk, he's going to be like, someone asked me out on a date.
Ah!
And I like him. And I don't know what to do.
Well, dear, what you say then is yes.
What do I say if my response was to just run out of the room? Nyrix just goes to get a bottle of alcohol.
You're a big bad gang leader, Bazo.
Yes, he is. And he is also a gay disaster.
We love him.
As he should be.
Mm-hmm. So the next question from Day Day is, what part of the Blades in the Dark setting is the coolest?
The Deathlands.
I think for me it's Leviathans. I just love ocean-y shit, and big tentacled Lovecraftian monsters are wife material, so you know.
Bonk.
The Cataclysm.
Yeah.
All the weird cosmic, like, the fucking stars move. I've had that nightmare, like we've observed recently. I've had that literal nightmare. And just like, just how weird and broken the world is. I enjoy that.
I like the fact that the moon.
There's some shit going on with the moon.
Right? Mm-hmm. There's weird shit happening with the moon.
Something's wrong with the moon.
I like that.
Something's
wrong
with everything.
Moon's haunted.
Moon is haunted.
Moon is haunted. Moon is haunted. Moon is on the other side of a vast crystalline dome that surrounds the world. Who knows?
That is still my favorite theory about this.
Moon is getting closer every year.
Yeah.
That's another thing that's happening with the moon.
What? I forgot about
that. I like
that
the moon is weird. Yeah. You all, secretly, Blades in the Dark is also the Majora's Mask universe, just very, very, very slow.
I think the moon is a moon. I don't think the moon is the moon.
Oh, yeah, you pitched this theory. You pitched this theory, I remember.
I literally have, like, a weird note somewhere that's just, is the moon a moon?
It's a space station.
How dare you? But maybe we're like, something weird that's approaching that's not a moon. It's fine. Don't think about it.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. And then our last question from Day Day is, what is one thing that you'd hoped to achieve during the Magpies campaign, either with the characters or the show, that you weren't able to achieve, but you're hoping to in the next campaign? I have an answer for this
Ooh.
One.
Okay. I have an answer too, and I think it's the same answer as you.
My answer is, as I have mentioned probably ad nauseum at this point, I love leverage
with all my little heart.
Well, no, it's not. I mean, kind of that, but really more it's I y'all need a Sterling.
Oh, yes.
You need a rival. And this is happening next series. I have plans. I want to give the crew a dedicated rival who neither of you can ever really stop the other. You interfere with each other's plans, but never to a point where you destroy each other. And at least one of you has some sexual tension with them. They're hot. They're going to have a dark backstory. And at some point, at least once, you will be forced to work together against a greater threat.
Yes.
It's happening. I love that particular rival character trope. And we didn't have one in Magpies, but we're doing it next time.
Such
because
a good
I am beat. Going to force that character into the narrative.
Yes.
So that's me.
I don't know.
I know. I feel like me personally, I achieved narratively what I wanted out of Blades with my character. So like the things that I'm aiming to do with Blue Jay are also things that I want to do, but I don't think would have served Magpies, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think it's more tailored to the setting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're doing different. You did you achieved all that you wanted to with Blair.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I guess in the future I just want like some amount of more scheming and to like actually let myself like not be a big plan maker. Because I feel like we all contributed a lot and I spoke up a lot during like making plans and stuff like that. But like, I think in the future, I definitely don't want to be a leader or like the main planner. Like, I definitely want to be like a little bit of a follower next time. And Minx was not that. Minx was
it
very
makes
much
perfect
not
sense.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
I want a vice that causes me problems. I really didn't lean into that with Myra. Myra's too, she keeps her vice too compartmentalized.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and we have been having some conversations in that direction already, and I promise, Minna, it'll cause problems.
Yes!
Get a trauma.
As an aside, that's an obligation. I don't know what that is, you know? We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. So our next question is from Violet Wren, who asks, what is the biggest lesson you learned about creating an RPG podcast that is informing Project Blue Jay?
For me, it's okay to not be in the spotlight for a long time.
Because
you kind of just got to flow with what works and let people play out what they need to. I know I can kind of force my way into things sometimes, but I think I've slowly learned to be like, you know what? I don't care if the scene between two other people is long. I'm just going to sit it out and let them play it.
Yeah.
I think for me, and this is more of a performance thing, is I'm trying to make a more conscious effort to speak more slowly. Because there have been times where I'm listening to an episode and I notice that I'm speaking really fast and like I can understand what I'm saying, but I hear that and it's just like, whoa, slow down. People need to like, you know, like, yes, we have transcriptionists, but people need to be able to understand what the fuck I'm actually saying. And like, I know sometimes I just get into it and forget, but yeah, I'm just going to try to just make my voice more radio friendly.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think just how much you gotta be a fan of every character on the show, I think, to like help. Because it's not just, you know, it's not just one narrative and it's like helping push all of each other's arcs and be fans of each other's arcs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think a lot of, some of my stuff is a little more logistical.
Yeah.
Of sort of figuring out scheduling and world building and, you know, making sure people have a chance to like play around with character stuff. But, you know, some stuff that there are some more specific things I would say that are you know, they're not lessons that I would necessarily apply to all RPG podcasts. I definitely have some of those lessons, but for this one, it's more like one thing. I'll share this. Josie kind of teased it a little bit earlier, but one thing that I really want to do is lean into the turf mechanic more, because every crew in Blades starts off with turf, which is a very small area, like a few blocks that is supposed to be where they kind of initially start working. And we didn't really do that. And from talking to other people who play and run Blades, that tends to be a mechanic that isn't used very much. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I'm aiming to do with Blue Jay is like, we're going to figure out the crew's turf and just really like dig into that neighborhood and focus in that area a lot. You know, and I also want to, like, kind of also going off of something that Mena said of I want to, you know, lean into vices a little more, have the vice purveyors be sort of bigger players in the characters' lives, people who can cause more problems, you know, just some different approaches. I also have a much clearer idea of what mechanics in Blades I want to use and which ones I'm just going to ignore. like, I'm not going to bother with the war mechanic at all. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm probably not going to use the factions mechanic. Like, when we actually get to building out the crew sheet, there's some points where you're supposed to sort of set up relationships with different factions, and it's probably going to be more of like, okay, who do you have kind of a positive relationship with? Who do you have a negative relationship with? And it'll be less of the like plus one, plus, you know, plus one, minus one numbers thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess I could sum that up as like, you know, again, kind of identifying what mechanics work for the story that we're telling and moving the rest out of the way. And then the last question that we've got is from the Coffee Robot, who asks, how far in the future is the setting of Project Blue Jay going to be? Will we have cameos of the Elder Magpies, Legend of Korra style? So I think we've settled on it's about 40 years in the future. And I don't think that in Blue Jay itself we will have Magpies cameos. There might be little callbacks and references, but I it's very important to me that somebody who's never listened to the Magpies can come into Blue Jay and not feel like they're missing out. It's not a sequel series. That said, we have definitely talked about, and this is not a promise, this is not a guarantee, this is a thing we've talked about that we would like to do. But we have talked about at some point doing a one shot where we go back to Duskfall and the Magpies, who would be like in their 60s at that point, where they all have to get together for one last score in the 1920s version of Duskfall. And I have no idea what that would look like, but I hope that we're able to make it happen because I think it'd be fun as hell.
Yes. Yeah.
We should get Madge back for that.
Oh, yeah.
That would be super fun.
Just Minx in those fashions is just
oh, she's got a fur so boa. Good. Like, don't even worry about it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
She has one of those, like, fluffy jackets with a huge poofy collar.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, and, like, the one of those really long cigarette holders.
Yeah, exactly.
You're essentially describing Cruella de Vil, but I'm here for it.
Yes, I am. But, yes. Like, but less evil and more lesbian.
Yes.
Yeah. But yes, so to answer that question, the Magpies are probably not going to show up in Blue Jay proper, but I think we'll probably end up checking in on them at least once, because... One other idea that we had talked about was that there's, like, a silent film made of the Magpies' escapades, and then the older Magpies are going to see it and are just, like, heckling and critiquing everything that's wrong. Throwing popcorn at the screen.
Do we have popcorn?
That's a good question.
It's probably not a cheap snack, though.
Popped mushroom?
Oh, that sounds nasty.
I know, it sounds bad. I don't like it. I didn't like it as soon as I said it. I don't like mushrooms.
I feel like
it's
fried eel strips or something. Something that's like fairly plentiful. Or like maybe like seaweed strips.
Crunchy.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is our
we did it.
Final question for this Q&A. Thank you to everybody who sent in questions. We got a lot of questions, uh-huh. So we had to do a little weeding to keep this at a manageable episode length. But thank you all for sending in questions. Thank you all for listening. And, keep an eye out on our Twitter, clever_corvids, for news on when our new show will be starting.
We love you.
I know.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
There's going to be a fun surprise for you on the audio, which is that I knocked over the microphone and probably made a horrible noise when I was getting out of here.
That'll be a me problem, and I will
it'll
see
be
the
a really big, obvious waveform.
Yeah, I will see the monstrous waveform and just delete it.
Yes.
Before I have to experience it with my ears.
It is literal actual law that you do not talk to him until he has had coffee.
Mm-hmm, yeah. He's beaten people to death who broke that rule.
Jeez.
To death?
I mean, they got dumped outside and nobody really checked on him, so they might have been able to crawl away. He says he's beaten people to death. It helps with the mystique. Bozo's not a good person,
he's
y'all.
Not.
I want to
he's
remind
not.
You.
He's not a good person.
None of us are.
But the three of you are somewhat morally better. So anyway.
Are we?
Yeah. Bozo would not have saved Six Towers from the horrible monster that he summoned. Bozo would have been like, I seem to have fucked up. Time for me to leave the city. Goodbye. I have fucked up in a way I cannot recover from. Farewell. Start over somewhere else. And I will say, I think probably in talking to the Gondoliers, they're like, we can do a shortened version of the ritual. We'll go fast.
Okay.
We're going to speed run this ritual.
Yeah. How long is a ritual speed run?
I mean, it's probably still going to be a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally it would be like an all-night thing. But, they will try to go quickly.
And hope
hey,
the
y'all,
Father
welcome to
this.
Forgotten Gods Done Quick.
If you angle your gondola just right, you can clip through the canal wall.
Yep.
God, build up your de facto speed.
My terrible, terrible brain is telling me water is super effective against ground types, and that's not how demons
work.
No,
it's not. It is remotely not. It's like fighting and something. No, for ground types, it's grass and bug, I think.
I don't know. Against whatever.
Ground types?
I got mixed up with stone. My brain is trying to use type effectiveness, and type effectiveness doesn't work on demons, is my point.
Yes. This is correct.
Actually, water is super against effective against ground. So,
okay. My time as a water trainer has benefited me. But not in this game.
He is specifically a demon of earth and steel are his. Or not steel, metal. See, you've got me talking in Pokemon terms. Earth and
steel. I should
metal.
Be looking at steel types instead, is what you're saying.
Oh my god. We're not I know that we all really like Pokemon. Focus up.
Firefighting and ground are effective against steel.
Kim.
So.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Not to wreck you again, but I just imagined Ragnar's inner monologue was like, from the minute he walked into my bar, I knew he was trouble.
Yeah, pretty much.
Scruff for days.
You worked with her. Sorry, Myra Mina just sniped me.
I tried to do it over voice, but I don't think anybody heard it.
No.
Which Elliot is this?
Elliot from Spencer. Leverage.
So I'm gonna say it on mic in case you want it.
Yeah. So his one of his catchphrases. Elliot has a mysterious and checkered past, and very often he'll like something will happen. They'll see something or someone, and he'll be like, "Oh yeah, it's but like something super specific." And everyone's like, "How do you know that?" And his response is always, "It's a very distinctive." Whatever.
I see.
It's a very distinctive like, watch. Just like, it's a very distinctive walk.
Yeah, just something as vague as that.
Yeah, it's a very distinctive sound. Like, there's, I think one of the earlier ones is like, he identifies like a super specific type of gun off of hearing a gunshot. And it's a very distinctive sound. Everyone's like, okay. But yes, no, that's basically what's happening here. So...
it's almost as if we play this game a lot.
Almost like that, yeah.
It's almost as if we do a show using this system.
Don't worry, y'all. We're part of the way through season 4, and we are going to fully learn the system.
Wasn't that like a Patreon tier for me? I was going to learn the game.
Yeah, $1,500 a month. Cam will learn how to play Blades in the Dark.
To my credit, I've gotten better. I know some rules now.
You have. Maybe by the time we finish the next show.
Yeah, I'll finally learn the ins and outs of the system.
Still need to gunpowder plot a Bluetooth.
a Bluetooth?
A Bluetooth device.
A blue coat station.
3. Sorry, I burped.
Blooper reel.
Please put that in the blooper reel.
3, 2, 1.
I will. Basically. All right. 3, 2, 1.
Sink. What? What's funny?
A shuddering laugh you can hear very faintly on my recording, probably.
Oh, I didn't even hear it.
Josie said burp instead really of sink.
Oh.
And I was working so hard not to start laughing during the 10 seconds of silence.
I'm glad it had the intended result.
Yep. Whew, all right. That collided with a bunch of other dice and therefore does not count. Oh, my D30 moved. I don't know why I have a
D30. Why do you have a
D30? I have one. So Waffles last year for either my birthday or Christmas sent me a bunch of like gaming stuff and it included a D30. And I was like, cool, a D30. I've never seen one of these. And they were like, I didn't send you a D30. So I think it's just like whatever store they ordered from just sent me that as well.
Huh.
So now I just have a D30. Kit Sutton. I'm with the Void Northern, what is it? The Society,
for Northern Void Sea History. Snivish.
Thank you. I'm never going to remember that.
Snivish. That's the only reason I remember it now. Thank you, whoever did that.
Also, is it just me, or has this gratitude episode been surprisingly horny? Like not just flirtatious, like actively horny.
Like 10% horny.
Yeah, like not maximum, but...
Right. We could be hornier.
Yeah, it's a little more than our usual episodes, I'd say.
This is Josie using 0.1% of her power.
Yeah, if me and Kim take off our weighted training clothing,
then... Okay.
I want y'all to know that I T-posed during that sink in silence.
You what?
I T-posed.
Thank you, Kim. Someone had
Wonderful.
To.
It just felt like it. Felt right.
Yeah, you know, sometimes that's what you gotta do.
It feels right to T-pose while we sink in silence.
Well, good thing I'm not human.
You are human.
She's Tiger
Rosie. Tiger Rosie. That's still human.
Is it?
It's just,
I thought Tiger Rosie was like its own thing.
They're like human variants.
No, you're demon touched, but you're still human.
Okay, then never mind. Yeah. I did not say that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
Blair is not built different. Dear listeners. Y'all, I'm so sorry Blair has so many issues.
Blair read Frankenstein and was like, no, that's good. You did a good thing.
Yeah.
Blair would also feel very bad for Frankenstein's monster and want to smooch it.
You'd be like, I'd be mad.
That's fair.
The lesson she took from it wasn't Victor Frankenstein fucked up. It's Victor Frankenstein didn't go far enough.
Victor Frankenstein and also didn't Victor love Frankenstein his child, is gay. And that was the problem.
Yeah. Anyway.
Victor Frankenstein gay.
There you go.
I could not believe that I could fall more in love with this awful person.
Now that is staying
in. Oh my god.
No, it is not.
Yeah.
That has to stay in.
Oh, Kim. Kim.
Stop. No, look at me. I don't know.
You know you're being recorded.
I know. If Myra looks myself right now, this is the most ridiculous Freaky Friday shit that we're doing right now.
Yep. Hang on, before I start talking out my ass here. How tall do oak trees grow?
They grow and grow and grow.
Wow! They grow between 50 and 70 feet.
Yeah, they're tall.
Wow!
Tall boys.
Oaks are big. Oak trees are amazing. Okay, that helps.
There's one in my dad's front yard that is taller than the house.
Nice.
That's awesome. I love trees. Anyway. I haven't been outside in a long time.
How have we, like, throughout the course of this entire show, never made a joke about, like, sickly little Victorian orphan boys?
I don't know.
I mean, I know we're referred to some street urchins.
Lisa. I would like a Baja Blast, sir.
What?
That's exactly the sound.
May I have some more Game Boy fuel, sir?
No.
Oh, fuck. I forgot I was wearing eyeliner today.
Oh, wow. I knew you were always my little pog champ.
Mommy.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of goofy sinking bits in the blooper reel. The blooper reel for season 4 is a lot shorter. I'm not sure why.
Oh, but our goofs are still as good as ever.
Well, for what it's worth, I think I've left a lot more bits in the episodes.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, I haven't been caught up on my listening. I wonder what that bodes for me. What embarrassing things I've said that made it to the public.
Kim, one fear.
Yes.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
Nobody can know.
I think
everybody who listens knows.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kim, if you don't want anybody to know, you shouldn't have said it on a podcast with a listening audience of at least 1,000.
Yeah, no, people know.
People know. It's okay. Yeah, it's okay. This is a judgment-free space.
Listen, if people are allowed to simp for Resident Evil, Mommy MILF, I'm going to shut up now.
Have you all seen the Markiplier video?
Yeah.
What Markiplier video?
I'll post it the next thing. It's 6.5 minutes of him having an absolute meltdown over the Resident Evil lady. Like, he's like, none of you told me. I just ran up here after learning about this 2 minutes ago to record this video. You get to watch him react to the trailers, like, live and unvarnished. He's never seen them before.
Wow, it's I usually don't think of Markiplier as a very horny person.
Oh, he's horny.
He says, like, at the end, at one point he's like, this isn't sexual. That's not what this is about. It's not about pleasure. It's about power.
How is that less sexual?
Yeah.
There's also, I think, one of his earlier lines is something this I think is probably my favorite bit is, you know me, I want a woman who can crush my head between her thighs. Any part of this woman could crush my head, and I know what part you're thinking of, and that's just one of several options.
Wow.
It's so good. I'll find the link and share it when we're done recording. It is just 6.5 minutes of a man having a horny meltdown on the internet, but it's a really respectful horny meltdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Markiplier's a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he is the embodiment of... I'm
simping respectfully.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Markiplier's a himbo.
Yeah.
He is absolutely a himbo. Yeah. He fits every definition.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right then.
Sorry for that tangent.
We're now 3.5 minutes into the recording. Great. Now the blooper reel will be longer. Let's go. Back into the fight. Jesus Christ.
You're welcome for my service.
Yeah, you paid for this, Patreon listeners.
You asked for it.
Min is just over here providing color commentary on this scene.
I'm sorry, but I'm just MST3K'ing at this point.
Please, I love it.
This is a very poorly done spam text.
Oh?
All, okay. Parentheses. Pay asterisk pal help. All one word.
Okay.
Your online, with a dash between on and line, has been compromised in asterisks. See here, extremely suspicious looking link.
Hang on, that reminds me.
Let's hang on. Delete.
Please put this in the blooper reel, but my work phone has been getting some very amusing spam text recently, and I have one saved that is my absolute favorite spam text that I've ever gotten, and I should probably just delete this. I shouldn't have it saved on my work phone, but it's just so goddamn funny. It says, chances are that if you have problems with erection strength all the time or occasionally, and you go to a doctor for help, you'll likely use with a prescription erectile dysfunction supplement to Stylus. Kylus? I don't know. While both of them do work extremely well, call here, and there's a phone number, support 24/7. Call now, phone number here, for free consultancy. Consultancy. Thank you. I can't read.
It should be a consultation, though.
It's a weird word. What?
So if you have problems with erectile dysfunction, I've got a number for you.
It's the strength is an unusual. That's not
erectile strength.
I mean, it's not erectile dysfunction. It's just the estrogen pills. I mean,
I have gotten away text addressed to my father asking to buy his house, and I'm like, no, stop.
For many reasons.
I'll also mention that because it's Friday night, I have been drinking with dinner.
Oh. Mm. I also
nothing
have
especially
wine.
Nothing especially exciting. It's just this really good hard cider that I can never find.
Yum.
I will forgive it for having it. It's good enough that I forgive it for having a name that is both a pun and a really like aggressively
really?
Hetero. It's a pun and it's a very heterosexual pun.
Oh dear!
Wow, it must be a really good cider.
It's so fucking good. The site it's called Right Beside Her, or Right Beside Her.
Oh, that's so cute.
And the thing is, like, boy meets girl, boy makes cider to woo girl. Now he's right beside her. To be fair, if someone were to
gay, we can do that.
Right? Yeah. It's also a very good cider. And to be fair, if someone were to make like hard cider to woo me, that would be effective. That would work on me.
Are you trying to romance
especially
me?
Especially if it was...
Yes.
Honestly, it's working. Nice. Oh, that packaging is really cute, too.
Yeah, and it's just like...
It looks so yummy.
It's a local Chicago thing. It's a... And they have a cute little bee logo, and it's a hard cider that's got honey in it, and it's... It's so fucking good, and I can.
Oh, that's a double pun.
And I can, yeah. It's many layers deep, and I forgive it because it's so good.
It does look delicious from those marketing pictures.
This episode is not sponsored by Right Beside Her. But if they wanted to just send me boxes of it, I'd accept that. Yeah, like a lying liar who lies.
We're lying like a large feline from Africa.
Do 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 do.
I feel like that moment right there is such an encapsulation of at least three of us.
It is.
I make a bad pun, resize Kim sinks.
This is gonna be a long fucking recording session, huh?
No, we're just on brand.
Hi, Ree. I'm just here to record some lines, but first I just wanted to let you know that if we were doing a Magpies Harem anime AU instead of Blades in the Dark, it would be Maids in the Dark. Hey, Ree. Before I start this audio, I just want you to know that if the Magpies were working to break into a sunglasses hut, the game wouldn't be Blades in the Dark, it would be Shades in the Dark.
I know Minna has actually stepped away right now, but I just wanted to say that, so I have it on the recording. And now we will wait.
Hello, future Ree. How are you doing today?
Don't answer that, Ree. That's for future Ree to answer. You're present, Ree.
Future Ree, get water. You're not
apologies
drinking enough water.
To future Ree, who has to listen to my groans of pain as I leaned over the bed to try and get my... I don't know why my body hates me this much today, but I very nearly threw my back out trying to get the dice off the bed.
Oh, no! That's just being in your mid-20s, baby.
I need to know her likes and dislikes.
Oh, okay. Likes. Money. Power.
Uh-huh. Right, I was thinking, like, hobbies.
Yeah. So,
filling
yeah,
out a dating profile for Lady Drake.
Yeah. I can't tell if you're saying blink or clink.
She definitely
that time
said
I said
blink.
Clink. This time
oh,
I said
clink,
clink
that time.
With a P. Okay. Last time I said blink.
Oh. Okay.
And you all said clink, so I have to think of something different next time.
It's rhyming so, dictionary.
You could say jinx.
That's true.
Wink. Tink. Think.
All right. So...
Mink.
Let's... Okay. And we're good. The bit is done.
Link.
Kim.
I'm done.
Massachusetts deserves. It's what we deserve.
I don't like it.
I like it. Megachusetts forever.
It goes... Chicago is now in Massachusetts.
Is it really?
Massachusetts,
yeah.
All the way to California. Just
Florida's
punch
exempt.
Straight on through.
I'm only...
we'll... We'll make long Washington and get Florida in that. Just diagonally the other way across the country. Anyway.
It still wouldn't hit me.
What is the name of this restaurant?
Waffle House.
No.
Absolutely not. Myra just is writing a lot of pamphlets.
That's a 4. Yeah, she's writing several anonymous pamphlets and distributing and having them distributed. Mm-hmm. Like, lady, the magpies did nothing wrong. Trial exposes new wrongs that the magpies averted.
The magpies have never done anything wrong in their life. Response
pamphlet.
We know
this and we love
you. We know this and we love them.
And there's probably another one, like, there's probably another one detailing all of the juicy details that came out in the trial about Lady Drake.
Yeah. And hang on, give me one moment. I need to dial up the Aussie accent. I'll stay on the mic this time. You can hear this is the thing that Allie has me practice with. I think she does this for any dialect lessons. It's this ridiculous, it's not really a poem, it's just this ridiculous thing to sort of practice sounds.
Yeah.
So let's see if we can.
Aussie.
One hen, 2 ducks, 3 squawking geese, 4 limerick oysters, 5 corpulent porpoises, 6 pairs of Don Alverzo's tweezers, 700 Macedonian warriors in full battle armor, including Colin Farrell, 8 brass monkeys. I'm still too far forward. 8 brass monkeys from the ancient sacred secret crypts of Egypt. There we go. 9 apathetic, epileptic, diabetic old men on roller skates with a marked propensity for procrastination and sloth. 10 lyrical, spherical, diabolical denizens of the deep who stole around the corner of the quiff, of the quo, of the quay, and all at the same time. There we go.
That is so excellent.
It's ridiculous, and I love it. Madge, I want to ask you to go last, so it can be a big reveal that you're here to our listeners.
Such a gremlin laugh.
It's so good.
It goes perfectly with my tiny baby Elmo icon.
Yes,
yes, it does. I enjoy it a lot.
Elmo flames. Wait, you have forever iconic. Yes.
Listen, I'm just setting you up for hurt comfort, okay?
Noted. Thank you, Game Master.
Listen, I know what we're about. I apologize. I have to go into a little bit of NPC theater here.
I'm so excited to hear it.
Talk.
Why do we need to seal her away? I'm so gay.
I know. She's so
there,
pretty.
There, Josie. There.
I'm right there with you, hon.
Comforting paths. So I'm very confused. It is dark outside, and there's some very confused bird just beep beeping away. It's bedtime, bird. Go to sleep.
No, I must scream.
No.
For I want some fuck.
Maybe a bull.
It's
he's a hoe.
It's dark. It's dark outside, little bird.
Becky loves blue.
Birds in the dark.
My brain just buzzed with that AU idea.
Oh god, it's the root magpies crossover.
Oh my god,
it's so good! They're all vagabonds!
Yep.
Oops, all vagabonds.
It'd be very cute.
Does that
cute.
Make the circle of flame the airy?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Six
I've overindulged.
Six is a little, I'm thinking like Six is lizard part cult. Of the otter or the lizard cult. It's got
absolutely be lizard cult.
For Six.
3, 2, 1,
Myra.
Okay, we're gonna have to do that again.
Sorry.
No, thank you, okay. Minna. Thank you for doing that so much.
I'm gonna the stinger for this episode is just I'm just gonna clip
yes.
all of these sinks.
And you just said it so deadpan and clearly you were just like, Myra.
You just sniped Josie from across the country. You just got her.
I've been planning this since the last sink.
3, 2, one.
Sink.
I heard Blair.
And I heard
something else.
I said piss.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I am going to have to require that when we start Project Blue Jay, we go back to sync so as not to confuse the new person.
Okay. Yes. For a while.
We can do the right thing for a few times.
We can work them into our nonsense.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my god.